supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. After weeks of planning, the city of Philadelphia has officially submitted its bid to become the home of Amazon's second headquarters, nicknamed HQ2. At a celebration at the Barnes Foundation today, Mayor Jim Kenney thanked the coalition of local business leaders, university presidents, college students, and others who gave their input to help build the proposal.
Through all the insight that diverse coalition provided, we formed our elevator pitch to Amazon for making Philadelphia their new home. And here it is. Philadelphia is in the Goldilocks zone for Amazon. Just right.
Mayor Kenney hopes that Philadelphia's burgeoning tech scene, relative affordability, and proximity to other major East Coast cities will convince the tech giant to set up shop in his hometown. So, is Philadelphia an untapped goldmine of young, bright computer programmers? WHYY's Jim Saxa asked the city's tech community and has this report.
A small group of 20-somethings in business cash are sipping beers around a bar table. The name tags are a tip-off. This is a networking event, one of dozens held every week across the city. This one's a meetup for Code for Philly, a civic hacking group where programmers get together in their spare time to build apps for the city, all for free. Chris Alfano helped found the group. During the day, he's the chief technology officer at a web software engineering firm in Old City. But at night, he's a booster for the Philly tech and startup scene.
Philadelphia is a really exciting place to be right now as a technologist because we have the business community, we have the technology community, we have the nonprofit community, and we have the government all on the same page right now, imagining what a city can be in the 21st century.
Alfano is a millennial. So is everyone else at his company, and everyone at this meetup. That's no surprise. Philadelphia's millennial population has been increasing faster than a lot of other cities, and a lot of those kids have college degrees, over 40%. Unsurprisingly, a lot of them work in tech. Philadelphia's IT workforce has grown by 25,000 in recent years. By some metrics, Philadelphia's tech sector is one of the fastest growing in the nation. But that's also because it was pretty small to start. Babies will double their birth weight before they turn one, but that doesn't make them big. Philadelphia's tech scene is still in its infancy. So, even though the tech talent pool has been growing, recruiters say it isn't big enough.
There's all of this opportunity, but yet it lacks the talent because there's not enough people.
That's Mark Constan, a recruiter for the Meet Group, a social media company. The firm is based in New Hope and is aggressively expanding its offices in Philly because that's where the engineers are. But even with the satellite office, Constan's having trouble finding enough high-quality candidates. Philly's tech pool is still a small pond. And the big fish here, the companies, are constantly fighting to gobble up talented programmers. Everyone we spoke to seems to agree. What Philly needs is a real big fish, a whale, to lure in more tech talent. Somebody like Amazon. Here's Alfano again.
In Code for Philly, I see a lot of university students coming through from Drexel, from UPenn, from Temple, and a lot of times they're leaving Philly right after they graduate because they want to go to Seattle, they want to go to the Bay, they want to go where the Amazons and the Googles and the Microsofts are.
So we have a high-tech version of the chicken and the egg. Big tech companies like Amazon might not come here because we don't have enough nerdy workers to fill their cubicles. And those nerdy workers don't stick around Philly because we don't have enough big companies for them to grow into. If Amazon built its second headquarters here, that dynamic would change. Sylvie Gallier-Howard is one of the lead architects of Philly's HQ2 bid. She says Amazon wouldn't have to worry about the city's relatively shallow talent pool for long.
We should think beyond just the Philadelphia region for these jobs. I mean, people will move here from New York. They'll move here from D.C. A lot of people have been relocating from those areas to Philadelphia because of our cost of living.
Philadelphia's business community has thrown itself behind the Amazon recruitment effort, writing letters to the company's CEO and even starring in some ads.
So very recently, Vanguard opened an innovation studio, and we chose University City because we were blown away by the level of talent. The amount of engineering talent is extraordinary.
Even the Wharton School got into the game, running student competitions to see who could make the best sales pitch for Philly. One of the finalists was Tiffany Chang. Her team sold Philly as a talent magnet, pulling in millennials graduating from college and people fleeing expensive cities. Chang is a junior. She just started hunting for a post-graduation job and doesn't know where she'll end up yet.
I just kind of want to move towards where like the companies I'm looking to work be a part of are, and Amazon is definitely one of them, so this has been a really exciting competition for that.
So you're almost like making a play for Amazon so you don't have to move?
Kind of. I actually really like Philly, so it's been really great, and it'll be amazing to stay here. Yeah.
Chang's team didn't win the pitch contest. But if Amazon picks Philly and starts hiring Ivy Leaguers like her, maybe Chang will win out in the end. Jim Saxa, WHYY News.
Meanwhile, Delaware is offering Amazon three potential locations in New Castle County for its second headquarters. Its financial incentives are confidential, but Governor John Carney touted the state's other assets.
We have location, we have lower cost of living, we have a great tax and regulatory environment. We have our tradition of working together, government officials, private sector, great business climate in that respect. We're right here in the Northeast Corridor with large populations from Washington, D.C. to Boston, through New York City, the financial capital, the government capital of the country. So we have a lot to offer.
Amazon is expected to announce its final decision for the new location sometime next year. After a damaging report on the opioid crisis from 60 Minutes and the Washington Post, Pennsylvania Congressman Tom Marino withdrew his name this week as the next possible drug czar under the Trump administration. Keystone Crossroads' Lindsay Lazarsky found mixed reactions from state and local officials who are working on the problem.
Whistleblowers and former U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration employees say Pennsylvania Congressman Tom Marino led the way to pass a bill that helped fuel the opioid crisis. Previously, the DEA could slow the rate of opioids into the black market by holding distribution companies accountable for suspicious orders of prescription drugs. But Marino's bill effectively stopped that from happening. The bill sailed through Congress with no objections and was signed into law by President Obama in 2016. Since the 60 Minutes Washington Post report, many lawmakers and Obama administration officials say they didn't grasp the details of what the bill would do.
We are losing 13 Pennsylvanians a day, and the numbers just continue to escalate.
Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro says his reaction to the report was disgust.
This was a failure of government, from the Department of Justice to Congress. But make no mistake, it was engineered by the powerful pharmaceutical industry from the very beginning.
Shapiro, along with 40 state prosecutors across the country, are targeting opioid manufacturers and distributors. He's glad Marino withdrew himself from consideration for drug czar.
I hope that President Trump actually puts someone in that position who's going to be on the side of law enforcement, on the side of actually solving the problem, not in the pocket of the pharmaceutical industry.
Congressman Marino, a former federal prosecutor and Lycoming County District Attorney, declined to be interviewed. In a statement, he defended the law as one that helps stem the crisis while ensuring that people who really need prescription opioids continue to have access. In Congressman Marino's district, Lycoming County Coroner Chuck Kiesling sees the consequences of opioid addiction up close.
My heart goes out to these families. You know, I spend many a day and night trying to figure out what do we do differently.
He is more concerned about getting people treatment than placing blame on Congress.
Unfortunately, there's people that start into programs and they fall off the wagon, go back to using again, and it's just a vicious cycle until they eventually end up through my office.
Last year, more than 4,600 people died of drug overdoses in Pennsylvania. Lindsay Lazarsky, Keystone Crossroads.
In the face of deficits and credit rating downgrades, New Jersey's next governor will focus on ways to try to correct the chronically underfunded public employee pension fund. A new report represents a cautionary tale for those who might look to Connecticut for a template on how to proceed. Let's make sense of that report with John Reitmeier of NJ Spotlight. John, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you.
Now, why is Connecticut even cited as an equivalent example of how to proceed?
Yeah, in New Jersey, we usually do comparisons to our more our neighbors who are closer by, like Pennsylvania or New York. But the report that I wrote about argues that Connecticut's a pretty good measuring stick for New Jersey. It has some similar characteristics, including relatively wealthy residents, some relatively high property taxes and other taxes, and also some relatively large unfunded obligations to its retired public employees, which is definitely a problem that New Jersey's facing. But it does seem like we can draw a pretty good comparison here between the two states and what they're facing.
So in the simplest sense, the options, as always, are raise revenue or cut expenses. How has Connecticut proceeded?
Connecticut has largely followed the track of raising revenue. And so Connecticut, over the last several years, has tried to enact a number of different tax hikes to bring in more funding to then be able to cover its expenses, including its obligations to public employees. In New Jersey, over the last several years, there have been a number of efforts to cut costs and also to put the state on a better footing in terms of making its contributions. And those efforts have had some mixed success. In Connecticut, where the efforts have been largely focused on bringing in new revenue, they're also struggling. And so the idea that simply raising revenue is the solution or the panacea, this new report takes a really hard look at that approach and shows that despite these tax increases, Connecticut's still struggling.
Let's take a harder look then at the report. It's put out by an entity called the Garden State Initiative, led by one Regina Egea, who has ties to Governor Chris Christie.
Yeah, for those who have been closely following the Christie administration, she was a chief of staff to the governor for a while, and she also served the Christie administration since pretty much the beginning as an official in the Department of Treasury.
Now, as you cited, there is no panacea. The real answer must be through some blend of both raising revenue and cutting expenses.
Yeah, and that's something that the credit rating agencies have brought up recently. And remember, New Jersey suffered through its own share of credit rating downgrades in recent years. The approach that has been recommended by one of the credit rating agencies has simply been maybe they're both right. Maybe there should be some revenue raising and maybe there should be some expense cutting. But we have a gubernatorial election going on in New Jersey right now. And on the campaign trail, you're really only getting one approach from each candidate. The Democratic candidate, Phil Murphy, is trying to bring in more money to live up to the state's pension obligation, while the Republican candidate, Kim Gaudano, is talking about adopting some of these cost-cutting initiatives that Christie tried to implement, including freezing the current pension system.
What would be the danger, playing devil's advocate, of continuing to ignore the problem?
Well, at some point, the bill is going to come due, almost like pushing a credit card bill further and further back without making anything but the minimum payment. And at some point, there will also be consequences. So New Jersey, like Connecticut, has had credit rating downgrades, and the unfunded pension obligation has been cited as one of the factors. New Jersey already has the second lowest credit rating to Illinois, and we risk going even further down. And what that does usually is drive up borrowing costs. Whenever the state needs to go to the capital market to borrow money for something that takes a long time to build, like a bridge or a new school, it will cost more money for the state to access that capital. That's one of the consequences of continuing to ignore this problem. Another consequence is at some point these funds are going to run out of money. There are individual funds within the broader pension system, and some of them are worse off than others, and in danger of simply running out of money.
John, thanks so much for offering perspective on NewsWorks tonight.
You're welcome.
NJ Spotlight's John Reitmeier. The Allentown Art Museum wants to be an integral part of that city's exploding downtown development, and it has a plan to do it. WHYY's Peter Currens reports on the museum's efforts to become a key player in Allentown's rebirth.
The Allentown Art Museum has been downtown for 85 years. It's known for its extensive collection of paintings from the European Renaissance.
The infrastructure for the arts has changed. Audiences for the arts have changed. The downtown audiences have demographically changed.
This is Museum President David Mickenberg.
The donor base for the arts in Allentown between 2008 and 2010 almost every major donor to the arts passed away. The state cut its funding. The city eliminated its funding.
While the museum was looking for new ways to survive, it's also watching its neighborhood have its own renaissance. In 2009, the state of Pennsylvania declared downtown a neighborhood improvement zone, the NIZ, that has deep tax incentives in order to lure developers, and that's just what happened. A new stadium, the PPL Center, was built, and new apartment buildings are flying up quickly, many constructed by the development company City Center. Rather than watch, the museum wants a piece of that action. So it plans to build a Center for Creativity and Innovation that will be an intersection of art, education, and community. It's also creating a think tank to focus on the role of art in the development of urban centers. The Museum Institute will have its inaugural three-day symposium next spring. Mickenberg says he's also partnering with that real estate developer, City Center, to build affordable downtown housing for artists, which the museum will manage.
The focus of the museum is changing. We will always be a collecting body. We will only be concerned about art in various manifestations and various different forms of art. But it really is about how we serve an educational function, how we're part of a central focal point of dialogue, how we aid in the transformation of the community.
The museum's big changes are reflected in a new logo and its first ever contemporary art commission. A sculpture by the Nigerian-British artist Yinka Shonibare will reflect the museum's new vision of itself, and it's expected to be delivered next year. Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.